This is Reginald Feltbender from the Goose Pimples, and you're listening to Juice Box, a music podcast. Sounds like a waste of time, that.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Juice Box Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, alongside the Fighting Frenchman, the 13th member of the Jailblazers bench, Nick Moreau.
Hey, welcome everyone.
There he is. We got a very exciting show for you guys today. If you missed last week's episode where we talked about our favorite albums from 2017, I would highly suggest going back and checking that out. It'll give you stuff to listen to all year long. But today, we are going to talk about our most anticipated albums of 2017. But before we do that, we're going to dive a little bit into
2018.
I'm not used to it yet.
Yeah, I know.
Do you remember in school when you had to, like, I don't know, I mean, I assume they did it the same in France, but you would have to put a date on the top of all of your papers, and I would always screw that up for at least the first 2 weeks of the year.
Oh, I did it for like the first 6 months. I feel like when I got older, there was a time where I did write checks and I wouldn't get the date right until like November.
And then it starts all over again.
Exactly.
No, I'm okay with being in 2018 though. I was ready to like go 2017 and get started with something new.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people.
So let's embrace it. Yeah. 2018. We'll talk about our most anticipated albums.
Yeah.
First of all, talk about a couple big stories on the music front this week. It's always anticipated in early January to see what the Coachella lineup is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
More of like as a barometer for what's going on in the music industry and, you know, not just as the festival itself.
Yeah.
And there's so many festivals these days. The amount of headliners that can actually headline a huge festival like this is not so many. And I always wonder how they're going to come up with someone new to headline Coachella.
Yeah, I think it's also leads to a point that we've talked about in private before is like, have we reached kind of peak festival craziness? I think we're seeing smaller festivals kind of losing traction, I think.
Yeah.
Where they're closing and they're replaced by kind of either joining forces with another festival to keep alive. I think specifically in Portland, we have Music Fest Northwest, who has its own thing, you know, for the last 10 or so years. And recently it's joined with another festival, the PAPS Project, because these were two separate festivals about a month apart before. And the feeling is that we're going to see that go along in the music scene, where I just feel like festival craziness. Every city has its own festival now, and every kid in their 20s wants to go to festivals. But I think that's kind of reached a peak now.
I agree. And I think these kind of catch-all festivals are the most difficult ones to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like some of the ones that are gaining traction are the more niche festivals, the smaller ones. Something like Moogfest comes to mind. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that Altamaro's parties were doing in Europe. But I think actually they have
ceased.
So maybe they're not doing as well as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's room for more festivals.
No, I agree.
Every weekend there's something, especially like on the West Coast. Yeah. There's always something going on.
Yeah.
So we got Coachella this year. What are your first impressions of it? The three headliners are The Weeknd, Beyoncé, and Eminem. We had a feeling Beyoncé was going to be in this Saturday night slot this year because she had to cancel her appearance last year, which was much talked about. She was replaced by Lady Gaga. She was obviously pregnant with twins and on doctor's orders not to perform a giant music festival.
Yeah.
So that's a smart thing. So what are your first impressions just knowing those three headliners?
You know, I think a lot of people that have been to Coachella, they wait for the poster and the poster comes out and the first thing is like, am I going this year or am I not? Right.
Yeah.
You know, based on the poster. And my first impression is that I would skip this year, to be quite honest. It's an interesting, you know, and this is my first impression. And then I gave it some time. And then I think it's a little deeper than I thought. There's a lot of good stuff in there. But I do think that this is the one of the first, maybe if I'm not mistaken, poster with headliners like that. Like there's no rock band, right?
There's no rock band, but on the other hand, how many rock bands are there that can headline a festival like Coachella? I mean, Radiohead was there last year.
Yeah. Yeah, but is The Weeknd, like, I don't know, when last time I went to Coachella, The Weeknd was playing his fourth show ever.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it wasn't a great show. But
it was not a good show.
But his music was really good. And now he's probably putting on great shows, and you could argue that his music isn't as good, which is interesting. But, you know, the Friday night slot, we've seen bands, you know, maybe in the past that we were like kind of doubting that they could fit that slot. But, you know, I feel like The Weeknd, Beyonce, and Eminem, not so much. They kind of appeal to maybe it's easy to be a fan of all three, right? Whereas in the past, you know, when you had Stone Roses and Blur, it's like you'd had like hardcore Stone Roses, Blur fans that might not be, I forget who else was on the bill, but might not be as big of fans of the second and third day headliner. Whereas here I could see somebody being like, I love these three so much.
Yeah, I think, so last year Radiohead was the Friday night headliner, mm-hmm. right? And then 2016, LCD Sound System.
Mm-hmm.
2015, AC/DC.
Oh, I forgot about that.
2014, Outkast. Mm-hmm. 2013, like you said, the Stone Roses and Blur. Before that, the Black Keys. So it's typically a rock-oriented headliner that night. I think Outkast being the major exception of the past several years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, headliners, I do think that Beyonce and Eminem will probably be amazing. You know, I think the show itself, maybe The Weeknd too. I haven't seen him live since that one Coachella appearance, but I feel like, you know, when we went in 2012 together, Eminem showed up for four songs. And
I was about to say, we have seen Eminem at Coachella before.
Yeah, and it was amazing.
During the Tupac hologram.
Exactly. And that was, I mean, that performance for four songs was great. I mean, the guy on stage, you know, love him or hate him, he's really good. So I'm sure it'll be really good. And I also know that he can probably play 20 songs that everybody knows. And he's probably going to have amazing guests.
Yeah, I'm hoping for, I think best case scenario, you get Elton John, right?
Yeah.
Doing Stan with him. That'd be pretty great. Cool.
That would be amazing. Or even Dido. That'd be cool.
Dido, I mean, I feel like Dido probably hasn't left her castle in England in 6 or 7 years. So that would be a nice surprise as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of surprises, there's not, I wouldn't say, usually there's some kind of reunion or, you know, really unexpected booking exclusive for Coachella. This year, I don't know what that would be. There's Jean-Michel Jarre, which is kind of interesting on day one.
Yeah.
I can't believe how high Jamiroquai is listed on, in what size font he's listed on the first day. Leading me to believe like the 90s nostalgia probably includes him a little bit too.
Yeah.
There's Belly is reuniting. I don't think there's a ton of people knocking down the doors for that in the same way as in years past for other things.
Is it Perfect Circle? I mean, is that Perfect Circle?
Yeah. I mean, kind of, but they headlined the Hollywood Bowl in the last year.
Yeah, that's true.
They're around if, you know, if you're a super fan, you probably had that on your radar.
Yeah.
They don't play that much though. So for some rock fans, I think that'll be a big deal.
Yeah. I think David Byrne is really interesting.
That would probably be a fun show.
Yeah.
He's going to bring some kind of theatricality to it.
Yeah. I think there's a possibility of a Jay-Z Beyonce, song.
Definitely.
That would be really cool.
I would be shocked if he didn't appear at least on one of the two weekends. With
her. Yeah. I'm kind of glad to see that there's a few bands that we're going to discuss in this episode and that we've discussed last week that appear on the bill. I think Moses Sumney, although I'm surprised how low he is on the bill, but he had your best album of the year and my fourth, and he's on there. I mentioned, you know, offline priests was in my top 10, and they're literally the last line on on day two. But that would be pretty exciting to see. I haven't seen them.
The only problem is you have to get into the grounds of Coachella at like 1:45 p.m. And it's a lot harder than you'd think it is to get there that early.
Oh, and it's not only is it hard on Friday, but it's super hard on Saturday because usually you stayed up pretty late on Friday night.
With a lot of the smaller acts that are playing, there are some that I would be super excited to see that I have never been able to see before. Mm-hmm. Leads me to hope for some local LA shows. They call it, there's a Golden Voice, the promoter puts on local shows around the LA area in the weeks between mm-hmm. the two weekends of Coachella. A lot of times for the smaller artists, Benjamin Clementine is playing day one. He's a guy, he won the Mercury Music Prize, I think 2015. And then he just put out his second album this past year, this past fall. Really kind of overlooked, super interesting performer. I'm hoping to see him sometime somewhere around LA. A band you talked about on our last podcast too, on the very last line of the last day, Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to finish up that full length and go on a little US tour around this time. That'd be nice.
Come on, guys, put it out.
Come on. Come on. King Cruel, Kamasi yeah. Washington. But to be honest, I feel like I would have a lot of dead time at the festival this year. Maybe that would lead to seeing some new stuff that I wasn't anticipating.
Yeah. I mean, another person I'd really like to see that I didn't mention last week is one of my favorite surprise releases of 2017 is Yeji. I think that'd be really fun in the desert. I think we skipped the OCs at FYF, and this would be a chance to redeem that. still wrestle with that one. I think that would be really fun too. But I agree with you. I think for the most part, I have a lot of downtime, but I'd probably discover some new acts or maybe go in a little later as, you know, getting older.
I know. I feel like most of the things I want to see are the earlier things, though. Even the mm-hmm. second line of most of them, the first day, the undercard with the weekend has War on Drugs, St. Vincent, Vince Staples, SZA. That's pretty strong. That if I was just going for one day, I think I'd go for the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, you won't be seeing us at Coachella this year unless somebody out there wants to gift us some tickets. They've already sold out both weekends. So I don't think Coachella's in trouble at all.
No, they're fine. They seem to be knowing what they're doing. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the greatest sign of success for them, right? Sell out on both weekends.
Yeah. And I know you and I are waiting for the FYF festival lineup to drop probably sometime in April. So,
One last thing I will say, though, that last year's Coachella did that this year doesn't seem to be doing is last year's Coachella seemed to pick up a lot of the FYF bill, meaning that the summer prior, whoever played FYF, a lot of them ended up playing Coachella the next year. I don't see that as much. I see it a little bit, but there's not as much of a direct pull. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Thinking about FYF this year, Nine Inch Nails could have fit the bill for a rock headliner. I think they could still headline Coachella.
Yeah.
Like I said, the list of those bands is so short these days.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think maybe we're seeing a strategy by Golden Voice to really differentiate both festivals.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, the crowds are pretty different, too.
Yeah.
And you see, I mean, FYF seems like it's always just full of hardcore music fans, and Coachella is full of people going to Coachella.
Yeah.
You know how else to say it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Another story I wanted to talk to you about today just broke this morning, and I was reading about it. I sent this link over to you. Radiohead, one of our favorite bands, is suing Lana Del Rey for songwriting credit on a song from her latest album, Lust for Life, called Get Free. This is, you know, the world of music copyright has really turned on its head in the last several years. Blurred Line case having a lot to do with that. That mm-hmm. song, the Robin Thicke, Pharrell Williams song.
Yeah.
And then Sam Smith kind of handing over about 40% of his song to Tom Petty a couple years ago, kind of mm-hmm. preemptively before there was any legal action taken. Radiohead doesn't seem like the kind of band that would go after something like this in my idea of them, at least.
Yeah.
And this story, you know, Lana Del Rey says, it's true about the lawsuit. This is her statement on Twitter. It's true about the lawsuit. Although I know my song wasn't inspired by Creep, Radiohead feel it was, and they want 100% of the publishing. I offered up to 40 over the last few months, but they will only accept 100. Their lawyers have been relentless, so we can deal with it in court.
Mm.
Damn. Yeah. In court, Radiohead has some relentless lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I feel like, you know, if at least in my mind, if Radiohead feels so strongly about it, they must have a good case to warrant that. I also read, while you were talking, I pulled up an article on Pitchfork that talks about that, interestingly enough, following the release of Creep, Radiohead were also sued in similar way by the Hollies for a 1974 song called The Air That I Breathe.
Yeah. Which was actually written by Albert Hammond Sr., I believe.
Yeah. And then I guess after that, they were listed as co-writers of Creep.
So do they need those songwriters from that song to join in on this lawsuit as well?
I know. The originals.
Have you listened to the Lana Del Rey song?
I haven't.
I would say it, and if anybody listening to this, take a listen to these two songs and let us know what you think. I mean, I've heard it when the album came out and mm-hmm. picked up some passing resemblance to Creep there. But that melody to Creep is one of those things that I feel like has existed forever. And like they already got sued about it from that Holly song in the 70s. So it didn't strike me as something that necessarily was taken directly from Creep.
Yeah.
That seems a little hard for me to imagine that can be proven easily in court, but the precedent has been set.
Yeah. But it feels like also, I mean, I don't know anything about law and how all that works, but the fact that Radiohead were themselves sued over a similar incident about the same song, feels like it weakens their case, right? Like,
yeah.
Feels like the argument doesn't really hold to me. And again, like there's a lot of songs that have similarities to other ones. I mean, if you start talking about like artists that now sample other songs, I remember Justice faced an issue with on the first album where they had over 400 samples and they didn't credit all of them.
Wow.
Notably, like, I think that one of the clap they were using in one song was the same clap as a 50 Cent song. So, I mean, it could go pretty deep at that point when you're talking about
sample. There are only so many guitar chords. There's only so many notes, really. And I think they're going to have to find some way to deal with this in a more efficient way in the future. I thought it was very generous of Lana Del Rey to offer 40%.
Yes.
Similarly to the way I felt when Sam Smith offered up that money to Tom Petty, and Tom Petty's people were very gracious about it and said they, you know, they had explored legal options with it, but they were bowled over when he just gave them 40% of the publishing on a huge song, like a massive worldwide hit.
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty classy way to deal with it. And people borrow, music is a conversation. So I have to say I'm a little shocked by Radiohead's stance on this.
Yeah, I am too. Maybe it's one of those where Tom had a tantrum about it and said, no, it's everything. I want it all.
You know, I was thinking about that. Is it Tom or is it, I could see it being Phil Selway, the drummer. You know, it's always the quiet ones. He's feeling like Tom's out there making money, doing yoga in SoCal with his Italian girlfriend, wearing tank tops.
Yeah.
Maybe they just want a little shine. Yeah. They're bored of not touring. They need to get into court.
Exactly.
So there you have it. That's our breakdown of the week in music news.
Yes.
Let's move on to our most anticipated albums of 2018. Mm-hmm. As we learned last week, 2017 was a pretty damn good year for music. What do you think 2018 has up its sleeve?
Well, if all the bands that are on our most anticipated albums do release an album, it'll be amazing. Granted, that's if the albums are good. But I think like I'm just excited to see what some of these bands are going to come back with. There's some bands that have had, you know, a long hiatus, and it's rumored that they have albums coming out. So I'm really excited. I'm also excited to see some of these bands play live. A couple of these bands have announced shows, and I'm excited to see them.
Yeah. So tell me, give me an example. What are you looking forward to this year?
I'm really looking forward to the Soft Moon's new album. It comes out on February 2nd. He's already announced a tour. He's coming to Portland and Mississippi Studios, I believe, April 6th. So,
tell me a little something about the Soft Moon.
So the Soft Moon, if you don't know much about the Soft Moon, I would recommend checking out his music videos. It's pretty post-industrial. Kind of a... puts you in a certain mood. I've never been to one of these shows, but I could imagine that it's very dark and a lot of strobe lights.
He's on Captured Tracks, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's a band from Oakland. The singer's Luis Vasquez. They were in the news last year or the year before because their touring van got broken into and they lost everything. So they kept touring and somehow. Try to make some money to just get to the next city. They're often described kind of like a dark wave. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have three albums, one called The Soft Moon. The second one was critically acclaimed called Zeros. I think it was a big deal that year. It came out in 2012. And then 2 years ago, he released an album called Deeper. It has some amazing songs as well. And that followed up on the success of Zeros. Yeah, so I'm really excited to see them live. So, and if new music comes from it, that's even better. So that's one that I'm really excited about. Another band that I'm excited to see that I saw live a few years ago, I guess now, was Jungle. They're rumored to have a new album coming out. I thought their first album was excellent.
How would you describe Jungle's music? They're kind of a little soul heavy,
a little funky and very dancey. I mean they're very of this moment, it feels. They're the kind of band that if you see them live, you're going to dance the whole time. And they're very actually and sound similar to a band I mentioned last week called Parcels. It's interesting that they kind of have that both that sound, but
they're on the Coachella lineup this year too, right?
They are, and they're on XL recordings. I think their album was huge for 2014,
home of
for that year.
Adele and Radiohead.
So just a small label.
And
it was their first album, and they had four or five singles that I think charted pretty highly. If I'm looking right now, like in the UK, their album, you know, charted at 7. Pretty big. And in the US, 84th on the Billboard 200. So not a small feat, but it was also really good. So I had a fun seeing them live when I saw them. I had a blast with the album and the EP prior to that. I'm just looking forward to a new release.
If they get their second album right, I could see them. They have a lot of potential. They could be very big.
Yeah, I agree. I'll mention a couple others that I think are on my list, but that you feel the same. I guess Car Seat Headrest is supposed to release a new album this year.
So Car Seat Headrest, he's putting out an album next month on Matador that is a re-recording of one of his earlier albums. I think it's called Twin Fantasy. Mm-hmm. And he's put out one track from it, but from what I understand, I'm not that familiar with Twin Fantasy, but from what I understand, the songs have completely evolved. I think he's what, like 23 years old, and this album was 5 years ago. So he probably did it when he was like 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So it's a completely, it's the same songs, but reimagined basically.
Yeah. And I'm excited to hear it. I think he's, you know, he's really interesting as a musician, as a band. I think they're really interesting. I hope it means they tour.
I've seen some fans online being kind of upset that he's re-recording this album that they really like. And so I kind of feel happy that I'm not so familiar with it. So I'll listen to it with fresh ears. What I also understand is that Matador is they are pressing that album on vinyl as well as the new one and releasing them simultaneously.
Why not? You know, but no, I'm the same way as you. I'm not too familiar with that album. So I'm excited to hear the new version. It will give me a kind of a reason to listen to both. And also I'm excited for anything they put out. I'll mention some that maybe are on both of ours. My Bloody Valentine, are rumored to release.
We'll see about that.
In the album. We'll see about that. Arctic Monkeys. We mentioned that in our last episode. I think we're both excited about that. I think the rumor is more than a rumor. I believe it's going to happen.
Their drummer said the quote was something like, if we don't put out new music in 2018, there's some kind of problem.
Yep, exactly.
I don't know. I'm very cautious about this new Arctic Monkeys album. I think they're a great band. Every single record of theirs, in my opinion, has been better than the last. But this is also, this is going to be album number 6.
Yeah.
And when you start getting into album number 6 territory and you've been taking time off from putting out albums, it's been a while. I'm just saying, you know, there's some warning signs out there.
Oh, I totally agree. But, you know, I thought the last album, AM, was so good.
It was so good.
Yeah. That.
So I'm challenging. It's a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a bigger chance that we're disappointed than that we're not. I'm just anticipating, and, you know, I'm pretty excited about it. But I think there's a chance we'll be disappointed.
What I really want is I want them to put out, you know, their best album ever, and then be, you know, they're already festival headliners everywhere in the world, but they should be able to headline Coachella or an American festival at this point, because they're one of the great rock bands on the planet, and they have been for a very long time.
And I think, like, just their story is fascinating as well. I don't know. They have a lore that I think is amazing.
They were made by MySpace, baby.
Exactly. Exactly.
Should have put them in my top 8. All right, who else?
There's a rumor that Frank Ocean might have an album recorded. We'll see about that.
He says he has one.
If so, bring it out. Yeah. If so, I'd love to see it in 2018. I'm curious about the new Superchunk album.
That's coming out soon, yeah? Next month, maybe?
Next month. Mostly because I lived in the Raleigh-Durham area. You lived there for a longer time than I did. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to see what comes out.
Hometown Heroes, their last album was great too. I mean, I thought it was probably one of their best.
Yeah. So, you know, and I've seen them live before. They're great, great live. So hopefully it spurs a tour. Schoolboy Q, I loved Blank Face. If it means we get more tracks with Kendrick and also Vince on them, oh my God.
Yeah. Awesome album.
Yeah. And then I'm curious about the Jack White album. I don't know that I love it, but I am curious about it. I think anything Jack White does is always interesting and worth listening to.
He's still got Carla from Autolux drumming for him too.
Yeah, so that's always good.
That's always good. Yeah. I don't even, to be honest, I can't remember a single song off his last album, but I didn't give it that much of a chance when it came out a couple years ago. But he's one of the true rock stars that exist right now. So anything he does is always worth looking into.
Yeah, and at some point, I'm guessing we'll get a White Stripes reunion for one of these festivals.
Ooh, I mean, maybe, but does Meg White, does she, I don't think she travels at all.
Yeah.
That's what I understand. The money has got to be, maybe the money's, she already has more money than she knows what to do with at this point anyway.
Yeah. Never leaves the house. Yeah. And then finally, we all know there's a Vampire Weekend album that's supposed to come out. I think we've discussed this offline before, but it's not that I'm really anticipating it, but it's more, like you said, wait and see. We'll see. We'll see how it is. But I'll definitely give it a listen. Yeah, so that's kind of my list. What about you, Hunter?
Oh, a few things that I'm really looking forward to this year. We've been waiting for TurboGrafx-16 from Kanye now for about 2 years. Pablo came out 2 years ago. Also with him, any excuse for him to get out doing live dates is great. I think maybe for his mental health, he should take this tour off, though. Mm-hmm. That's just a suggestion. I'll be glad to see Kanye and always look forward to his new music. If that's coming out this year, I don't know. Otherwise, one of my favorite bands of all time, Manic Street Preachers, are coming out with, God, I don't even know what album it is. I want to say it's their 10th full length, 10th, 11th.
Wow.
Resistance is Futile, coming out in a couple months, at least in Europe and the UK. I don't think they have a current record deal here in the States. You can't even stream their new single on Spotify in the US, which is really annoying. They are going through a late career renaissance of sorts and been putting out really strong records for the last, I don't know, maybe about 7 or 8 years now, when it kind of seemed like they had hit a plateau that wasn't going to be nowhere near their peaks. Mm. But they're like always a very interesting, they exist in their own universe, kind of political, poetic arena rock band from Wales.
Yeah.
So I'll be looking forward to that for sure. The Good, Bad, and Queen are supposedly coming back with their second record, following up on their last album, which was released in 2007.
Wow.
That long. It was Damon Albarn, of course, from Blur and Gorillaz, a side project, turned into a tour and just an incredibly beautiful album.
That was great. I loved it too.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have been waiting for something else from them. This is a band that, it's Damon Albarn, mostly, he's the songwriter, vocalist, and mostly playing piano, at least on their first album, with Simon Tong, a guitar player from The Verve, not the main guitar player from The Verve, but kind of the second monkey there, and Paul Simonin from The Clash on bass, and then incredibly, Fela Kuti's drummer, Tony Allen, on drums.
Yeah.
Giving it this, like, they're kind of downtrodden acoustic songs with kind of a real beat to them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a great album.
So he says that album has been recorded. Hopefully we see that this year. I can't wait to hear this new album from this band Ganger, to me, they're like the British Deer Hunter in a way. They're a little bit more lighthearted than Deer Hunter, but they put out a really good album a couple of years ago, and I'm really looking forward to the sophomore release. I think it comes out in April.
Yeah, the EP too is really good.
Yeah, the EP is great.
Yeah.
Check them out. That's GENGAHR. I believe they're pronounced Ganger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love me a little country music. Kacey Musgraves has an album, I think, coming out in March. She's one of my favorite current singers in the country world. She's really smart, writes really kind of subversively traditional songs in a way. And I think she's a star. I mean, you don't hear, living in Los Angeles, you don't see a lot of country acts come through town, which is kind of funny. They usually play in the suburbs, and I've seen her. She headlined the Greek Theater last year, so I think she's starting to have a nice little profile bump. And she has a great Christmas album too, which I listened to a lot throughout the Christmas season.
Nice.
And then one other thing, There's a Scottish DJ, Sophie, who produced a couple of songs on Vince Staples' last album, Big Fish Theory, that we talked about last week, putting out his or her debut solo album in March. And I say that because Sophie is, his name is Samuel Long, and has been accused of kind of appropriating femininity in his persona. I saw Grimes accusing him of that, and I don't believe he is transgender, but musically identifies as female.
Okay.
There's been a couple singles from the album that have dropped so far, and it sounds really cool. But I think, you know, if people release their album dates closer, they hold them closer and closer to the vest these days, and we get a lot of surprise releases and things like that. So I imagine we have no idea what actually is going to come out this year, and that's what makes listening to music in 2018 all the more exciting.
Yeah, there was one other band that I thought of, and we'll see if that happens too, but Chromatics are rumored to have a new album.
Yeah.
And I think we're both excited about it. I thought the work...
I think it has a title. Is it called Dear Tommy?
Dear Tommy, yeah. And I think Johnny Jewel did some work for... the Twin Peaks, is it Revival or I forget how they call it? But anyway, I'm pretty excited about it. I thought they used a single, no spoilers, but in the first episode of the Twin Peaks season 3, and it sounded great. So it made me excited for some more music by them.
The only problem with the Chromatics is, from what I understand, Johnny Jewel records, has recorded the album 45 times from scratch and just burns all copies of initial recordings he does and things like that. He is such a perfectionist too dissimilar from Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I think this album, was already recorded and then he burned it all.
Probably. Yeah. Probably at least 10 times. All right, great. Well, those are our most anticipated albums from 2018. Join us here on Juicebox Music Podcast as we'll be breaking them down probably as they come out. Individual weeks.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, I'll be stoned on the subway.
Reading back the directives of what I should do. First week of the new year usually doesn't bring too many interesting album releases, and we were not planning on reviewing anything this week. We'll start our new album reviews next week based on, you know, the couple weeks around each of our episodes, we'll be reviewing a new album.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there was a few surprise releases in this last week that have really been jamming out to a little bit. Fairly high profile, at least in the indie rock world. Francis and the Lights put out an album called Just for Us.
Mm-hmm.
He's a New York based songwriter, works a lot with Chance the Rapper and Drake. But he's kind of a piano-based, soulful songwriter. He's been poised to break out for years now, and I'm not sure what's going on with him. He's kind of got a soft rock, Michael McDonald, little like yacht rock sound to him. Pretty positive. His album sounds pretty good. I've only gotten to listen to it once or twice, but he just kind of self-released it, put it out.
Nice.
And then... King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard put out their sixth album in the last year, surprisingly. Wow. Gumbo Soup. Their last album they put out, they put out so many albums in 2017 that they gave out their last album with no copyright on it. So anybody could press and sell copies of that album. So you can find crazy vinyls of it, all different colors, from all different manufacturers and record labels and things like that.
Wow. I remember you saying that. That's so cool.
And they're putting out too much music, so I feel a little intimidated trying to get into their stuff. But if people react really positively to this one, I'll definitely give it a listen. And one last artist, Jeff Rosenstock, surprise released a new album called Post that I've been really rocking out to over the last couple of days. He's a Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter, kind of has a power pop meets emo kind of thing. He also reminds me of Randy Newman.
Mm.
He's like, if Randy Newman recorded it mixed with like Weezer's Blue album mixed with third wave emo, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And you mentioned
really, really cool songs on that album.
That you mentioned to me that Martha was touring with him.
Yeah. So one of our favorite bands right now, Martha, is touring with him in the States, on the East Coast and some in the Midwest. I think he's doing some dates on the West Coast without them first. So I'm hoping that Martha makes their way to the West Coast.
Yeah.
But I would love to go to that tour.
Yeah, that'd be great.
If I was in one of those cities for sure.
Yeah.
So next week on the pod, what are we going to review? We've got a couple releases that are really interesting to me. First off, the new album from Black Rebel Motorcycle Club.
Yeah, I'm hoping, I'm hoping we have something amazing to talk about for them. Because when they do it right, it's really good.
Yes, that album is called Wrong Creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other album next week that I'm really looking forward to and probably would have made my most anticipated albums list, but it's coming out next week. So I just thought I'd roll with it here, is Songs of Praise by this band Shame. Mm-hmm. They are kind of one of the most hotly tipped young British bands. They're supposed to have a killer live show. And from what I've heard from them has been amazing. They have this song called One Rizla, if that's how you pronounce it, which is just like, it's just a scorcher. It's an all-time indie anthem.
Cool. Do we want to do, I guess we can decide later if we want to do both or not.
Yeah, I think we might have time for both unless there's really so much with that Black Rebel Motorcycle album that we can't stop talking about it.
Okay. Well, I hope so.
So that's on deck for next week, the pod. If you guys want to reach out to us and send us any suggestions, any comments, any criticisms, any albums you want us to talk about that are coming up soon, definitely get at us. You can email us at juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com. Is that right, Nick?
That's right.
That's right. And then you can also hit us up on Twitter. I'm at McClamrock. That's at McClamrock. And you, Nick?
And you can find me at Niklas Moreau, NiklassMoreau. Easy to find. Hit me up on Twitter.
All right. Sounds good. We'll see you next week.
All right. Bye. Beep, 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 beep in my head.